Susan Lowe left her home in small-town North Carolina to come to Baltimore to study painting at the Maryland Institute College of Art. It was the late 1960s, an exciting time for art and filmmaking, and a great time to hang out in Fells Point. In Baltimore, Susan Lowe met the young, long-haired John Waters, became a part of his troupe of actors, and introduced him to the star of his early movies, Divine. John Waters told Susan Lowe she had star power, and eventually cast her in 10 of his films, from Desperate Living to Serial Mom and Cecil B. Demented. In today's second hour of Midday, we talk with Susan Lowe, artist, actress, teacher, and one-time rocker, on Midday, after the news from NPR. And welcome back to Midday, our second hour. Dan Roderick's here. Thanks again for joining us. Susan Lowe is in the studio with us. Actress and artist and one-time rocker Susan Lowe had a role in 10 John Waters movies. She's from the John Waters troupe known as the Dreamlanders. She arrived here in Baltimore in the late 1960s to become a student at the Maryland Institute College of Art to study painting. And she ended up with John Waters and ended up in 10 of his movies. And she's been in town off and on most of the years since then and has a couple of things cooking in Baltimore this month and next. So we thought we'd have Susan on the show to talk about that. Susan Lowe, nice to have you on the Midday Show.
I'm so happy to be here, Dan. And thank you for having
me. Yeah, I was trying to think of the last time I saw you. I might have been at an opening of one of those movies. Is that possible?
Oh, yeah, because...
Pecker. Cecil B. Demented?
It could be Cecil B. Demented.
Hairspray or Crybaby, you were in 10 of them.
I've been in 10 of them and starred in two.
Well, it's great to have you on the show.
Thank you so much.
I said Susan has a couple of things cooking. She had a screening of her movie that she had a role in, Desperate Living, last week at the Charles.
Right.
And now you have an art show at Max Gallery opening up.
Yes, I'm very excited about it because the gallery's beautiful. It's a kind of a new gallery. And I'm showing with one of my favorite Baltimore artists, Linnea D'Agostino, a wonderful painter. And she's also, I'm a figurative painter, and she is too, and we both love color. So please come. It's Saturday at the Max Gallery from 4 to 6, and then probably a party afterwards. So
that's good. That sounds good. And more information about that later in this hour. And we posted some information on my Facebook page and tweeted it out and all that for you, too.
Thank you so much.
So I've talked to John Waters about the beginning of his career.
Right.
But I was trying to think, except for Vince Peranio, maybe, and George Figgs. Remember those guys, right?
Oh, yeah. I still hang out with them.
Right. Okay. I don't think I've talked to any of the actresses, about the early years with John Waters and how all that happened. So you came here to go to Micah. You grew up in a small town in North Carolina. What was that town's name? What was the name of that town?
Reidsville, North Carolina is where I was born. And... my parents moved to Washington when I was about 5, I guess. But I spent all my summers working on the farm.
It was a family farm.
The family farm, my grandparents' tobacco farm.
A tobacco farm.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So where did the bug to be an artist come?
That's a good story for me. When I entered kindergarten, I don't think I was socialized, so I didn't. I didn't talk at all. I sucked my thumb instead. But I remember just, you know, hanging around behind the door, sucking my thumb and crying because I wasn't socialized. And so they said, what the hell are we going to do with this kid, you know? So they brought out an easel and some paints and a brush. And that was it. And I remember the day.
You remember that as a 5-year-old?
I remember that as clear as can be. And that was when I was first illuminated about being an artist.
So having that brush in your hand and an easel, that really lit you up.
It lit me up, and I started talking the next week.
Wow.
Yeah. So.
Wow. And so as time went on, were you a doodler? Did you sketch things at home? Did you draw on the walls?
I did that. I probably started art school pretty early. I went to the Corcoran in Washington, D.C. for a couple of summers when we all lived in Washington. And, you know, then I went on to the Maryland Institute, and then I...
How did you pick MICA? Do you remember?
Well, because it was closest, and it had one of the best, you know, reputations as an art school. But I had so much fun at the Maryland Institute. And then I had to drop out because I started a family when I was very young. But I went back to school later on and got all my degrees and started teaching at MICA as a professor of art history and painting and drawing.
I would love to hear you describe what Baltimore was like when you got here to go to MICA. You were still a teenager, right?
Right.
And Fells Point and that whole scene and how you got pulled into the Fells Point scene. Anyway, what was Baltimore like in 1960, whatever, 7, 68, something like that?
Well, for me...
68, we know there were riots here, right?
I know. I remember the riots, and I remember that the curfew was 6 o'clock, and I remember sneaking around, you know, after 6 o'clock, but being really scared because there were army trucks going up and down the street constantly, and it was like they had rifles in their hand. They were ready. And it was something to go through that. And it seemed like black people liked hippies because we'd always get the peace sign from, you know, black people that were driving around or walking around. They liked hippies because hippies were for black people, you know.
So that was 1968.
Mm-hmm.
So what year did you get here?
I got here in 65, 66.
Oh. Why don't we start? I'm just curious about that. What Baltimore was like in those years, even before the riot?
Well, I just remember pretty much what it was like to be at the Maryland Institute. And it was so much fun. And they only had the two buildings, the main building, and they had just purchased the station building.
Hmm.
So, you know, we didn't have the Fox building or the...
The gray building?
Yeah,
the brown building.
The brown building or any of that.
The grayish brown building, yeah.
And now it's excelling and probably the best art school in the nation now. I know that Maryland Institute competes with the Chicago School of Art. So,
who are your most memorable instructors from MICA in those days?
Reba Stewart.
And Reba Stewart?
Yes, she was beautiful, and she was a hard girl. She would come in and tell us off, and look, you guys, only one of you or two of you is going to stay in college anyway, so you better just do what I say. And if you don't, just get out. So I remember
her. What did she teach? She taught painting.
She taught design.
Design, mm-hmm. Yeah. Anyone else you remember?
Oh, yeah. Well, there was Raoul, I think. Raoul Middleman was
Raoul
there.
Raoul Middleman, yeah.
And, of course, Grace Hartigan was there then. And most of the professors there were only a few years older than us. They were fresh out of grad school.
Mm-hmm.
So they were, and I remember, you know, we'd paint with turpentine. Nobody knew it was toxic, you know. And we'd be smoking and, you know, using turpentine and drinking wine, you know, with the teachers.
Right.
So it was really a fun time.
And what about Fells Point?
Did
you end up living in Fells Point or just visiting?
Oh, okay. Vince Perenio.
Yeah.
Found a bakery, this old bakery in Fells Point. And so we rented it, and it was so cheap. I think my rent was like $10 a month. And it was this huge old warehouse that Vince had a chance to decorate, you know, and make these little sets in every room. And, you know, it was really fun. And Fells Point was absolutely nothing then. It was absolutely nothing.
There were a few bars. Bars, right?
They had a lot of bars, but a couple of the bars were gay women's bars. The Cat's Eye and Ledbetter's were, you know. And then I guess around 1975 or something like that, it started to become a little more commercial. I was Bertha's first barmaid, so
really?
I saw all that grow up, yeah.
Bertha's Mussels, the horse you came in on was down
was
around
still
the corner,
there.
Right?
Uh-huh.
Turkey Joe had a bar down there.
He came later, actually.
Yeah, in the 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So when you mentioned Vince Perenio, you said he had access to a warehouse. So he was already designing sets for John Waters?
No. I introduced Vince to John. I introduced John to Edie. Edie was the barmaid.
And Divine.
And Divine.
So we'll go through all of those.
Okay,
first,
great.
Go back to Vince Perenio.
Okay.
How did that happen?
Well, Vince was a student with me at the Maryland Institute. And, you know, I would always sit behind him because I just thought his paintings were the best and I wanted to learn from him. So what I did, I would always, you know, find out what classes he was going to take, and I just followed him, you know, so I could learn painting from him, actually. Mm-hmm. And I really respect him as a designer and a painter.
So he became interested in set design.
He was always making his rooms into something.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah, let's go over this room. This is the Victorian room, and this is the this room, and here's the modern room.
You mean in this old warehouse?
Yeah, in this old bakery.
Where you lived.
Yeah. And he made a planetarium in one of the rooms. I mean, that's how brilliant this man is.
And that was in Fells Point.
That was in Fells Point before anything was going on.
So since you introduced him to John Waters, I guess I should ask you, when was the first time you met J.W.?
Well, I met John through George Figgs, actually. George Figgs and I were teenage sweethearts. And George was in Eat Your Makeup. And that was not a movie that I was in. I came for the next movie.
This is a title some of our listeners may not be familiar with, a John Waters title, right? Eat Your Makeup?
Yes, Eat Your Makeup.
From the 60s, from 67
yes.
maybe?
Or no, early
even
60s.
Earlier. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Back to Vince?
Well, you met John Waters through George Figgs.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
That's fine. And so then you introduced Vince to John Waters.
Yes.
And Vince was involved in many of John's films, I guess the rest of them, right?
The rest of them, starting with Mondo Trasho, which was the next movie after Eat Your Makeup. So this is how John and I bonded. I walk into his apartment, and he's playing Ike and Tina Turner, and they were my fave. And we started talking about how we just loved black music so much more than, ew, the Beatles, ew,
right.
They're cornball. And so that's how we, John and I, bonded.
Who else? James Brown?
James Brown, the all the Motown, you know, Gladys Knight, and the OJs, and all those people.
And John was making films already when you met
him. Yes.
And was he living in Fells Point? Or
no, he was living, I think, on 23rd Street.
Okay.
And that was even before he moved into the high-rise there around the park. I forget what it...
Edith Massey, also known as the Egg Lady.
Yes.
I remember her from Fells Point, from her shop down there. When did you meet her?
We had this bar next to the bakery that we would hang out 24 hours a day. Because the beers, you get a pint of beer for 15 cents. I mean, even then, that was cheap.
What was the name of it, Susan?
It was called Pete's Hotel.
Pete's?
Hotel.
Pete's Hotel.
Yeah.
In Fells Point.
Uh-huh. And Edie was the barmaid. So there was some other, you know, interesting.
She was kind of startling, wasn't she?
She was startling. And I called John up and I said, John, you have to get down here, man. You have to meet these people. I mean, you won't believe the barmaid here. So he came down, and Devine came down, and, you know, Edith was in the next movie.
And which was what?
Mondo Trasho.
Mondo Trasho.
Mm-hmm.
I have a memory of Edith Massey from...
Oh, I'm sorry. Was it Mondo? Yeah, it's Mondo Trasho.
I have the order here if we have a loose track. Edith Massey's story. So this is years later.
Right.
And she's in Fells Point. She had a store there, right? She was selling antiques or so-called antiques, right? Collectibles.
Secondhand.
Secondhand stuff. And in the middle of answering a question from me about something, she turns around and yells at a woman who's in the shop with her.
Jean.
Don't wet the tender vittles.
Oh,
it was
wow.
The cat food. They were having an argument over the cat food. And there's this cat food called tender vittles, right? Which I think is not, is chewy or hard or...
I don't know. I've never eaten it.
Me neither. So the other woman in the shop had a habit of moisturizing the tender vittles.
Lovely.
Now I'm really hungry. Then it blew into a whole argument about who was feeding the cat and what time and whether you're supposed to put water on the tender vittles. That's my Edith Massey story.
Edith loved her cats. And I remember one time in Desperate Living when Edith just had a very hard time saying Mortville. She would say Mortsville, and it was cut, okay, take, cut, take, cut, take. And John went over to her and says, if you don't get it right this time, I'm going to go to your house and kill your kitty cats.
Now, Mortville is a town, that's funny. Mortville is a town in Desperate Living.
Right.
And you had a role in that as Mole McHenry. Would you say that's your most memorable John Waters role?
Well, yeah, because I was one of the main stars, for one thing. And I had to build a character that was really like a man. And I do get a sex change in the movie, and then I cut it off and throw it out the window, and the dog eats it.
That's what happens in Desperate Living?
Yeah.
Now, this is 1977 mm-hmm. by then. So you had been in a couple other films before that.
Mm-hmm.
So how did you, it didn't take much for John to convince you to try acting, or what?
I wouldn't. In those days, I don't know whether we called it acting. We just all thought we were artists, and then we were doing something collaborative, and turned into something big for John.
To give people a sense of Desperate Living, we have a clip from it. And I don't know that we're going to hear your voice in this, but this gives people a sense of what the film was like. This is delusional housewife Peggy Gravel having a breakdown in front of her maid, Griselda Brown.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Minx Dole. Minx
That's
Minx Peggy Gravel, yeah.
And do you know who played Griselda Brown?
Yeah, Gene Hill.
Gene Hill. So this is Minx Dole and Gene Hill in 1977 John Waters film Desperate Living.
You having another fit? Can't my husband watch the children? Can't that lazy moron do one thing?
The kids are just outside. They're okay. Let me get you some of your fit medicine.
Griselda, my life is in danger. Please, don't let anybody hurt me.
Oh, there. You've got to keep calm, woman. You're just imagining things.
That's what you think. One of the neighborhood children just tried to murder me.
Oh, my God. So Peggy and Griselda go on the run after killing Peggy's husband?
Yes.
And then they end up in Mortville.
They end up in Mortville, a city of criminals.
Where they meet Mole McHenry.
Right.
Which is you. And you're which sex at the time they meet you?
Well, I look like a boy,
mm-hmm.
but I'm a butch lesbian,
okay,
as we might have called it then.
So you've made a transition.
Yeah, and then I go get a sex change
right.
because my girlfriend was always dreaming about men, and I thought I'd better be a man. I better become a man.
That happens in Desperate Living.
Yes.
Susan Lowe is our guest. Susan, we have some music. I want to hear this music. This is from another film. This is from Female Trouble? Female Troubles. Or is it Trouble?
Trouble.
Female Trouble. From a few years earlier, and there was it had a theme song that John wrote. Did you know that?
No,
I don't know if he wrote the song. He wrote the lyrics to it. Is that right? And Divine sings it. Let's hear it.
Female Trouble.
Yeah. We're going to talk about Female Trouble when we get back. Susan Lowe is our guest. Artist, actress Susan Lowe appeared in 10 John Waters films. More with her when we get back. So that's a song you're familiar with, Susan, the theme from 1974's Female Trouble. Our research found that John wrote the lyrics and Divine is singing it there. But
right.
You sang it too, right?
Yes, I sang it with Mink. We had a collaboration at the Creative Alliance about 5 years ago. I had an art show, and then she was going to sing with her band. And so we both got together and, you know, had a couple of rehearsals, and we sang Female Trouble.
What was it like making these movies with John Waters?
Lord.
Can you describe some of that for us?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you know, he wasn't mainstream until, like, Hairspray,
right.
I guess.
Right.
So we were poor. I mean, in Desperate Living, our makeup was dirt. You know, we'd go to the costume.
Right.
You
so
know.
If you needed to look dirty, you just put dirt on your skin and your face.
That was our makeup.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Get those fingernails dirty now.
Right.
So Desperate Living was rough. It was because it was freezing. We had outdoor scenes, and even indoor scenes was it was freezing. So... and, of course, I had a hard time building this character, and I think that I may have gotten the character towards the end of the movie. But I had a very hard time getting back to my real self after that movie.
After, really? After Desperate Living?
Yes.
You mean returning to Susan Lowe from
exactly.
Moll McHenry?
Exactly.
And a lot of people identified you from that role, right? Especially because
yes.
of the way you wore your hair and that,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm. I was ugly, really ugly.
The earlier films were Mondo Trasho. That was the first one where you played an asylum inmate,
mm-hmm.
right? Multiple Maniacs. You had a character named Cavalcade Pervert?
Yes, I was one of those. Thank you.
A Cavalcade Pervert. And then Female Trouble, you played Vicky, a receptionist,
mm-hmm.
1974. This is the trailer from, am I right, the trailer? From Female Trouble, some of it.
Dawn Davenport is eating a meatball sandwich right out in class.
Here she is, divine as Dawn Davenport, a feisty young high school girl.
My parents are going to be real sorry if I don't get them cha-cha heels.
Nice girls don't wear cha-cha heels.
Give me those presents. I'll never wear those ugly shoes. I told you not to.
Yes, she had a lot of problems. And she found herself in big female trouble.
Can you... what was it like to go to an opening for one of these films, a premiere in those days? I'm talking about pre hairspray or even pre polyester. What
we
was it
had
like?
Big openings, like, you know.
And where were they held?
Charles Theater, or the really early ones were in the basements of churches.
Really,
where I guess he would rent the basement
uh-huh.
and show these. Very unreligious films.
Very unreligious. I've never heard it described that way, but that you're correct.
Mm-hmm.
And John was having battles with the Maryland Censor Board
yes.
all through that time.
Oh,
the famous
was...
Mary Avara.
Oh, we love her, right?
Right, yeah, right. And then when you get to the later films, like Polyester, for instance, 1981, Tab Hunter. I remember that when that film was shot, wasn't it shot at the Fontainebleau or something?
Yes.
The scenes were shot there?
Yes. Can you imagine?
That was a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then I guess more mainstream is Hairspray
yeah.
and Crybaby. You were in all of those. And Serial Mom. And the last couple, Pecker and Cecil B. DeMented. And that whole time that you were having roles with John in John's films, you were still creating art?
Yes.
Like what? What were you doing all that time, Susan?
Painting or drawing or, you know, I never really stopped. I really identify all my life as being a visual artist. So I always worked.
It was just
my nature.
How would you describe it again, your
my
style?
Work?
Yeah, what would you say about it?
Well,
for a radio audience.
I use the figure, and lately I'm painting small cartoon faces of people, and then I will... title the works in a very funny way after I see what these characters look like. So the literal of these paintings is just as important with these new paintings anyway as the painting itself.
Mm-hmm. I'm going to go back to the Dreamlanders.
Okay.
And we'll talk some more about your art a little bit later on. And also a class that you're going to be teaching at the Creative Alliance this fall, or actually starting this month.
Yes, the 16th of September.
I just want to mention it to our listeners, because Susan will be talking about this in a few minutes when we get to this subject. The nature of psychopathy.
Mm-hmm.
The word psychopath is in the word psychopathy.
Right.
You had a psychopathic relative.
Yes, I had, this is in the South where I was born, a second cousin who was a serial murderer. And he murdered his grandparents and others. And
this is something you discovered about 20 years ago or so?
More than that, I think. I remember hearing the old people talk about it, and it was always hush-hush, like the children can't hear this. But it was big news then in Reidsville, and there are four books written on
this cousin of yours.
Yes.
And that sent you on a sort of a journey to
yes.
understand more about
exactly.
psychopaths.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll get to that in this hour or two. But if you don't mind, I just want to spend a little more time on the John Waters years, and then we'll talk about your art and then the nature of psychopathy. I was curious about Divine, because
mm-hmm.
I had the pleasure of meeting Divine a couple of times, and just a great person, died too young.
I still cry.
Yeah. So how did you meet Divine?
I met Divine, not through John, Van Smith was John's costumer, makeup artist. and he was also studying at the Maryland Institute when I was there. We became friends, and, you know, I've always loved gay men, so I was in that kind of gay crowd. And Van said, come on, go with me to a party. It's at the Marlboro Hotel, which was, you know, students and crazy people.
Where was that, Susan?
That was on Utah Street, sort of, I think, mm-hmm. right around there.
Okay.
So
is it gone now, the Marlboro Hotel? Is that torn down?
I think it's changed,
okay.
maybe. I'm not sure.
I'm trying to picture it, but anyway, mm-hmm. go ahead.
So he takes me to this party, and the first thing, I walk in the door, you know, here I am, what, 17 or 18, and, you know, this big woman, Alexis, comes over to me, and she says, hi, hon, and she sticks a amyl nitrate popper. I don't know if you know what that is, but a lot of gay people were doing poppers at that time, and she stuck one in my nose, and I thought I was going to go crazy. But it was a party, a drag party. And
at the Marlboro
at
Hotel.
At the Marlboro Hotel. And, you know, they were all like Elizabeth Taylor and Liza Minnelli. And, you know, Divine, of course, was Liz Taylor. And that's how I met Divine.
Divine was Liz Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Was Divine a good Liz Taylor?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding? Studied.
And so you got to talking that night.
And we became friends. And actually, he lived a couple of doors up from me when I lived in Bolton Hill when I was in college there.
So, and John Waters is making his films and mm-hmm. does not know yet about Divine.
Yes, he does.
Oh, he does?
Yeah.
Oh, uh-huh.
He does, yeah.
Okay.
Because Divine was in the very earliest movies.
I'm sorry, because I thought you had introduced...
But I didn't meet Divine through John.
Okay, I understand that. Mm-hmm. I thought you had introduced John to Divine. But
no,
they were already connected
exactly.
in filmmaking. Oh, I see, okay. But you introduced him to Vince Peranio
mm-hmm.
and Edith, the Egg Lady, Massey. Susan Lowe is our guest here on the Midday Show, 410-662-8780. It's live talk if you want to call in and ask Susan a question about the old days with John Waters, the early days of his filmmaking here in Baltimore, what Micah was like over the years when you were a student there. Please give us a ring, 410-662-8780. 8780. So those Dreamlanders, that crew of actors who, you know, had many roles in John Waters' films over the years, these were people that you became friends with over
yeah,
the years.
Yeah, and we just became like a repertory theater.
What was it like when John would launch a film and you were in it and there was controversy about it? Because we are talking about the time of the censor board in Maryland, and that was a big deal, right?
Yeah, well, they didn't understand kids in the 60s. We weren't going to have it. We're going to fight back, you know, because, I don't know, kids in the 60s had certain kind of power.
Right.
You know, because it was a cultural revolution.
So it must have been pretty cool to be associated with that.
Yes. Yeah, it was really, like, part of being cool and, you know, smart and all that and... not racist and that kind of stuff.
When John directed a film, from your observations of him in directing a film, what is he like as a director? Would you say very precise?
People
think this is all stream of consciousness or something, but it's really not. Right?
We had to stick by the script. And if we didn't, he would get angry.
Yeah, because he wrote the script.
Yeah. Right. and he's a writer.
Right. So Susan Lowe, wanted to... Oh, we have a call for Susan. Zippy in Baltimore. Zippy, is this Zippy Larson?
It sure is, Dan Roderick.
Because you're the only Zippy besides the pinhead that I know is Zippy Larson. So, hi.
Hi. I took Susan Lowe's class back in November of 2013 at the Creative Alliance. It was so cool. It opened up a whole new area on John Waters that I didn't know, hearing it all from Susan. I have a note here that said John became famous. Let's see, he and Divine became two of the most shocking people on Earth in Technicolor. John was catapulted into the spotlight as the king of puke. That's what I learned from class, one of your classes.
King
Hi,
of
Susan.
Puke.
Hi, Mimi.
Pope of Trash, Zippy.
I mean Zippy.
Zippy.
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, it was a cool class.
Sorry.
I'd recommend it to anybody who wants to learn more about Baltimore.
You know, can you tell us when John became really famous? When do you think that was?
I think that he rocked around, Pink Flamingos,
Pink
I think,
Flamingos.
Was his, you know, big launch, mm-hmm. actually, into the underground film circuit.
That's an amazing film.
Mm-hmm. Amazing film.
It's the iconic. Isn't it sort of the iconic John Waters divine film, right?
I'll tell you, Desperate Living these days is really popular. I'm shocked.
So tell me, what was that like? Now, last week you had a screening of it.
Right.
At the Charles. I'm sorry I missed that. But what was it like in terms of the audience and what people
said? It was a big audience, and it really went well. Of course, I was nervous because I was presenting and doing the Q&A afterwards. But I feel like that, you know, a lot of times when I get on stage, I'm totally comfortable.
Would you say that crowd was... people you were familiar with? Baltimore is a small town, but there's some people there?
Yes. I mean, I think Desperate Living has come back to life because of young people. I really do. I've talked to a lot of young people who they think that Desperate Living is the best. Well, I think the script, this is my opinion, I think the script is one of his best scripts. I mean, that Turkey Joe scene... is like
in Desperate Living.
Yeah.
So, and to see these films nowadays, it's not that easy to see a John Waters film.
Well, certainly not run of the mill.
No. I mean, but you got to, I don't know, are they on, any of them are on Netflix besides the more mainstream ones?
Yes, a lot of them.
These older ones are?
Maybe Female Trouble, but not one of the really old ones.
I'd like to find out. Michael in Elkridge, thank you for calling Midday. You're on with Susan Lowe. Hi.
Hi, Michael.
Hi. It's my first time calling.
Well, welcome. What did you do? You have a question for Susan?
Yes, I have a question. Susan, I would like to know, what do you think of the what do you think about the entertainment industry compared to then and now? Like, what are the differences? Do you think it's better, worse, or yeah? That's my question.
I mean, is there anything like John Waters other than John Waters?
Well,
it's hard to think of it.
There's nobody like John. I don't think it's, you know, maybe. A couple, you know, Martin Scorsese put out a lot of edgy kind of films, and, you know, I love him, we all love him, but there's not ever going to be anything like John Waters movies. I mean, it's classic trash.
Yeah.
That's what he was.
Especially that older stuff.
Yeah.
Right?
Mm-hmm, the older stuff, yes.
When you get to that sort of, I call it the crossover there, Hairspray, Crybaby, Serial Mom, which I really liked a lot. Well, by the way, you were a court groupie in...
Yes.
You had a small role in Serial Mom?
Yes.
When Kathleen Turner goes on trial?
And I talk about, John used to love to go to trials, you know, famous trials.
Yeah,
and
I know.
So... I think that I talk about to someone else, I talk about, oh, yeah, we went to this trial and I went to that trial. And, you know, but I have a better story from Female Trouble.
Sure, we'll go back to that. That's 1974, okay. Where you played Vicky the receptionist.
Right.
All right.
Well, I was pregnant with my 43-year-old son, and John wanted this baby to be Divine's baby in Female Trouble. Divine has a baby. So I was 10 months pregnant with my son, Ramsey.
Well, you're overdue.
I was overdue, and John's going, when is this baby going to be coming, you know? So finally...
Because he needed a baby for the film.
He needed a baby for the film. We had to stop filming, you know, just wait for me to have this baby. So finally I said, geez. I ran around the block, and then I went into labor. So John put this...
Did you go to the hospital?
Right after that, yeah.
What hospital did you go to?
It was, what was that? The hospital that they tore down on Broadway. Oh, Church Home.
Church Home, yeah. Where Edgar Allan Poe died.
Yeah. Church Home. So a week later, he films the scene. But my poor little mother-in-law from England never saw anything. She's from the country, and she's, oh, darlings. And here comes Divine. You know, she came over to see this little new grandchild she has, and here comes Divine and a whole film crew into the apartment, and it was insane.
Oh, my God.
We were throwing...
She knew you had a role in a movie, right?
She knew that I did movies, but she didn't know it would be anything like that.
She thought
that
it was going to be a David Lean film or something,
exactly.
Right? That's pretty funny.
Yeah.
So you had the baby on deadline. Actually, you were over deadline.
I was over deadline, but we filmed it right away.
What's that baby's name? He's 40...
Ramsey McLean.
Ramsey McLean.
He's listening right now, I think.
Excellent.
Hi, Ramsey.
410-662-8780, if you'd like to join our conversation with Susan Lowe from the John Waters films. 410-662-8780. A short break. We'll be right back. Welcome back. Dan Roderick's with Susan Lowe. We mentioned George Figgs, and George used to have the Orpheum Theater in Fells Point. He used to make appearances on my TV show, Roderick's for Breakfast, years ago. Great guy. Did he have a role in one of these films? Did he play Jesus in one of the John Waters films? Am I right, Susan?
He played Jesus in Multiple Maniacs.
Goodness gracious. I have to go. George introduced me to all those films. I actually made it available for me to see a lot of those films back in the day. I like to check them. What, do you have a favorite? Do you like Desperate Living? You think that's the best one?
No, I love Female Trouble.
Female Trouble.
Okay. Divine is brilliant in Female Trouble.
I had a suggestion for a John Waters film, a new film. It was going to be called Steamed Females. And it's about an intersection in Baltimore City where there are four crab houses, and they all compete with each other.
Mm-hmm.
And one is run by, two of them are run by women who compete against each other for customers with their crabs.
Mm-hmm.
It was going to be called Steamed Females. And I know, but
that would be very Baltimore.
I know. But John, he hasn't made a film in a while.
Right.
And he has this idea for a Christmas film called Fruitcake, right? Which is a work.
Yeah, I don't think it's a very. I think it's the idea has been around for a little while.
Yeah, I know. So, I mean, I don't know. Do you have any insight as to why these films don't get made?
Because
a John Waters Christmas film, to me, just begs to be made.
Yeah, he has a script around. You know, I think that he really loves his comedy show, and he gets to travel the world for his comedy show.
It's quite popular.
Yes. And he, in my opinion, he's a writer. I mean, he's a fantastic writer.
Mm-hmm.
And
I enjoyed his hitchhiking book.
That was really fun.
Yeah, and he's a delightful interview.
The last two books of his, I think, were very different from, you know, his previous books.
Those films cost a lot of money to make, too.
Well, that's one of the reasons I was going to mention that, you know.
I would like to see a John Waters Christmas film.
But just add that you to never my know. It might come out.
Add that to our Christmas film collection. Susan Lowe is our guest. Jim in Baltimore wanted to say something to you. Hi, Jim.
Oh, hi, Dan. Susan, you may not remember me. My name's Jim Zucker, but I met you way back in 1967. And just hearing you talk reminded me of some really great people like John Weisingring and Tommy Platt and folks like that. And I think we took a trip to Atlantic City a couple times, and what's really amazing to me, because I knew a number of the people that were, in the films, David Lockery and a couple others, and
yes.
It never occurred to me in my wildest dreams that John would become this incredibly popular and successful guy.
Mm-hmm.
Just really terrific.
Yeah. He, you know, we always thought that something was going to happen with this. You know, at first we all just thought we were artists, you know, and we were doing a collaborative. But for some reason, I knew in the back of my head that it was going to be something, you know, because of how driven John is when he's, you know, making his art. You know, it wasn't stoppable, you know, in the old days.
I want to mention a couple of things while Susan is with us here. First of all, your show of art at Max Gallery,
mm-hmm.
has already commenced or is opening?
The opening is the 12th, this Saturday from 4 to 6.
And runs through a date in October.
October 10th.
Thank you very much. Okay, so that's at Max Gallery.
Mm-hmm.
Be able to see the artwork of...
That's in Butcher's Hill.
Yes, Susan Lowe and her collaborator on that...
Linnea D'Agostino.
D'Agostino. All right.
And fabulous artist.
Somewhere on Facebook or Twitter, we've sent a link to information about that show. Now, also coming
at the
Creative Alliance starting next week.
16th, Wednesday evening, 6 to 9.
The Nature of Psychopathy by Susan Lowe, my guest in this hour, who gets to this subject of the psychopathic behavior of a serial killer because of a member of her own family.
Is a serial killer, yes.
His name was Fritz Klemmer.
Right.
And how was he related to you?
His mother was my mother's cousin. And I was, you know, born in Reidsville, and this family were from Reidsville and Greensboro. They were more business people, and we had a farm. And I remember the old people, like, mentioning Susie Sharp and the Sharps, and that was the name of the family that... you know, that were living in Greensboro. the family of the serial killer, Fritz Klemmer. Around my age, he was always interested in, like, dressing up as a cop or a cowboy as a child. And, you know, that's pretty common with a lot of serial killers. They like the power that they get from wearing some sort of uniform, especially like a cop uniform. And a lot of serial killers will act like cops and stop people on the road and then kill them. But I became interested because my mother, she handed me this book and she said, here, read this. This is your family. This is about your family.
How long ago was that?
That was when I was like 38, you know, which was like maybe 100 years ago.
Come on, Susan. I was like 25 or 30 years ago. All right, okay.
And so,
you didn't know that Fritz Klemmer had been the subject of a book until that point?
Or? No, I knew that something was going on because...
Did you know that Fritz was a serial killer before your mother told you about that?
No.
Okay. There were just stories around.
Yeah, there was just stories, hush-hush stories, okay. You know, and hear the old people.
But you didn't know that he was actually a serial killer?
No.
And then you read this book?
And then I read the book, and... It was all these serial killing episodes of his were happening in the 60s. So I had read the book.
Well, you were here as a student at MICA.
Exactly. My cousin was the same age as me.
And where did these killings occur?
Well, he was a traveler, and he would kill people and pick up hitchhikers and say, here, you know, stay in the car here and just watch it because I'm an FBI agent and I need to go up to the hill to this house and see what's going on up there. And meanwhile, he was going up there to kill him. But and eventually this one kid that hitched a ride with him came out when all the murders were coming out, and he, you know, blurbed about Fritz and his little adventures. He was involved with my other cousin, Susie Sharp. He was involved because she was fighting a custody battle, and her ex-husband was living in California. So he had their kids a lot, and she wanted to get them back. So he and she were first cousins, and they were having an affair. Fritz. Yes, which is pretty weird anyway, but... he started killing all the family members of the ex-husband. And he would travel far. Kentucky was where the ex-husband was born. And, you know, he killed the sister and the mother and the father.
And he did, but not the ex-husband?
No, because he was in California. So
when he was finally arrested, I guess.
No, I'm not going to tell you the end.
Don't tell me the end. Okay. Can you tell me how many murders were pinned on him by the authorities?
Maybe about 10.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he's been the subject of 4 books.
Yes.
So what happened to you on this? You just decided, I'm going to dive in and try to understand not only Fritz, but what leads to serial killing.
I started studying it. I just started reading the bios of serial killers and... You know, and then I realized after reading them all that there's some kind of commonality here. There's some kind of symptomatic thing. And then I thought, well, maybe it's a disease and, you know, and so forth. And I just studied.
You just wanted to know more.
Yes. And just this year.
So based on all that, you've put together a class.
Yes.
So it'll be a series of lectures at the Creative Alliance?
A series of lectures at the Creative Alliance, the 16th. And I will show films of some of these serial killers, pretty horrific serial killers. And I usually talk about probably the most interesting. And when I say interesting, I mean the pathology, how, when, you know, where, and, you know.
Have you given these lectures before, or is this going to be the first time?
No,
I'm sorry, I didn't know. I didn't know this about you, Susan. Oh. This has sprung on me today. I didn't know.
It's pretty recent that I've been lecturing. I lecture at, you know, Pratt on this subject sometimes, and, you know, they pay me good, and, you know, people, you know around town that I study this, and, you know, so I hope I get students for next week.
Starting next week at the Creative Alliance, and how many weeks does it run?
It runs 5 Wednesdays, so it's a course. I love it.
Are there other members of your family who have learned about this, too, in recent years, in the last couple of decades?
Well,
who didn't know earlier about Fritz Klemmer?
We all knew about it, but it was kind of hush-hush, so you put it in the back of your head. I think I'm the only one that really pursued the knowledge of it.
And did you hear from any family members who didn't like you doing that?
Nope.
Okay. And any family members who are saying, thanks, Susan, I didn't know all this. No.
It's don't have my previous family, my birth family.
Yeah.
I don't have anybody left, really.
Susan, let's take a couple more calls
okay.
here. Boy, I don't know what to say about that. That's really...
It's very fascinating.
I
love it.
It is. Terry in Baltimore, you're on Midday with Susan Susan Lowe. Hi.
Hi, Susan.
Hi.
I'm just fascinated about all this, about you, about the serial killers and whatnot, but that's not the reason I'm calling. I used to hang out with the whole crew back then in the 60s
wow.
at Maryland Institute. Linda Strickland,
oh,
Alan
yes.
Reese, Alberta DiMarino, and all of the people. I was kind of like on the fringe with my girlfriend, Dale Metzke, who is a producer in New York now.
Oh, good.
But I used to feel that I was hanging out with the people that were like the salon of the turn of the century in Paris. I said, these people are going to be big. I just knew it.
Yeah.
With John and Glenn. I mean, there were just so many really creative people back then, and I was just really happy to hear that you were on Broderick's, and it's just great hearing your voice.
Well, thank you so much, and you know, Alan Reese is listening right now, and I didn't know if you knew, but Alberta had died about 10 years ago, and John Leisenring is not with us anymore either, but Alan's still here and listening. And he's one of my dearest friends. So I'm very lucky to have known, you know, all these people and to have remained friends with them. It's been a long time.
Weren't they terrific people?
Oh, love, 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 love.
I'll just mention it again. Terry, thank you for that call. We didn't mention the title of your show at Max Gallery.
Oh, sorry.
Renegade Misfits.
Yes.
I like this. Renegade Misfits, starring Susan Lowe, and it's Linnea D'Agostino.
Mm-hmm.
And Max Gallery, for your information, is in Butcher's Hill. Is that Madeira Street?
Yes.
Where my father was from Madeira, Portugal. Did you know that? You
really?
Didn't know that.
No,
I learned
know
something
that.
About you today.
Well, I'm Spanish, too.
Are you really?
Yeah.
You have a Spanish
mm-hmm.
background?
Cuban. Mm-hmm.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
Susan, it's been a pleasure to have you on the show. Thanks for being here today.
Oh, Dan, my pleasure. I've had a really good time.
Yeah,
thank you very much.
This is really interesting stuff. So your show openings has already opened, according to this. September 3rd runs through October 10th.
The opening is this Saturday, 4 to 6.
Oh, okay. But the show is up already.
The show is up,
okay.
Yeah.
And what else? Yeah. You're
16th.
You're starting the 16th at the Creative Alliance with The Nature of Psychopathy.
Thank you very
and the
much,
the story
Dan.
Of Fritz Klemmer. Thank you, Susan Lowe. And thank you, everybody, for tuning in to our midday for today. And thanks for lunch for our guests, the Kenilworth Farmers Market, and also Terra Cafe. So have a great afternoon, everybody. We'll see you again soon.
Midday's producer is Maureen Harvey. The associate producers are Michael Himowitz, Melody Simmons, and Connor Graham. Midday's engineer is Luke Spicknell. Music produced by Jeff Truman and High Gravity Sounds. Midday podcasts and live streaming is available at WYPR.org. Dan Roderick's column appears in the Baltimore Sun. This is WYPR, your NPR news station.